It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time. It is that time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio none other than Terry Snyder. And has she been busy? Welcome, Terry.
I have been this week, Mike.
Not only have you gone to meetings, and we'll be talking about those and all the detail that flowed from them, but you have been watching, as I have, of course, that gavel-to-gavel that is filled with all the goodies. So what we're trying to do today is digest some of it and say, with all of that that was talked about, where are we on this day?
You must be talking about the marathon joint session yesterday. Is that one of the things you were going to talk about?
Why
the legislature?
Maybe we should start with the legislature and start with that very,
eight and a half, long. 8.5 hours or
right,
8 hours. That
right.
must have been some type of record.
And I'm not sure that everyone in the legislature spoke, but I know that many people did. And a number of them stood up and said, well, I had not planned to speak. But and it was inspirational because the suggestion was that they had heard something and they were responding to it. They didn't come in there with a locked in concrete position, statement, et cetera, but they actually played off one another and had, to some degree, a debate. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, I think that some of it was prearranged. You could certainly tell when people were talking from prearranged talking points, a lot of them from the governor's position. It was, after all, his appointees. And I think they knew ahead of time there would be some close votes, which there were, and the governor had prepared for that, particularly when it came to the Department of Safety, with Amanda Price. In fact, they brought a whole cadre of people in to have a press conference even about that. And that was a close vote. Same thing with Adam Crum. Both of them were pretty close. And I think they were pretty prepared for those big ones. There were some end of the session, kind of at the end, that I didn't quite see coming. And it got a little loose, as Jeff Lansfield would say.
You mentioned Amanda Price, mm-hmm. and I was struck by one thing. I watched enough and watched the votes. And for listeners, this is a joint session, so that means there are 60 votes going to be thrown out
Well,
there.
Well, Mark Newman wasn't there.
Yes, so it's 59 total.
Newman was not there for some reason.
But it's the combination of the Senate mm-hmm. and the House that goes together. And what stood out absolutely for me, since many of the votes were obvious that one side or the other prevailed, but the Amanda Price vote in the Senate was 10 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
10 to 10. And there's some suggestion that that speaks volumes, just because that meant that there were a number of people in the majority had to do it. I mean, people moved over. Not everyone is in one side or the other stayed there. They moved across.
Valley delegation didn't stay together.
Right.
Senator Showers voted against it, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 10 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's curious. But at the end of the day, there was only one person, and I think that was Mr. Johnstone, who didn't.
Yeah, there were a couple of boards and commissions,
right.
I think, at the end of the day, and they got a little wild and woolly. But Johnstone was definitely one that people didn't see coming, I don't think, from the fish board.
Right.
And that got rolled down to the end of the calendar. And I will say that Senator Geisel and as always, Representative Bryce Edgman, I thought, did a really good job running it. And with all those people, it was kind of whack-a-mole there for a while with people jumping up and lots of at-eases, as you might expect when people are trying to round up votes. But I think they handled it pretty masterfully.
And of course, for listeners, there are at least two categories. We can talk about the commissioners that the governor had selected for appointment passed. They all did, and they all are going to be his commissioners, in permanent positions rather than a designee, appointee, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So then there were other boards and commissions that have to be dealt with.
Pages of them.
And also the other piece that I was impressed with, and I think the reason why I stayed with this so long, was that there were some people who spoke well about different positions. And what I was also struck by is that two people could look at the same, what appeared to be the same piece of paper that represented a person's background, and come with very different impressions of what that meant for someone who's going to be in the position that was being discussed.
Well, and I don't recall other confirmation hearings, and they only come every 4 years, so you have a tendency to forget maybe. But talking about hearings as much as this group did and recent hearings, because there was some pretty lively debates at some of those hearings. I know Adam Crum was in one on Saturday with Health and Social Services, and Ivy Sponholz and her team had a lot of questions about API, about senior benefits, a lot of questions they didn't get some answers on, which left them pretty uncomfortable. So these hearings were not a slam dunk. Amanda Price got called back several times. Usually it's one and done with these commissioners. This was not the case in these appointees. Plus, we shouldn't forget, Mike, that were a lot of people that applied that at the last minute jumped or were pulled out of this list, which sometimes happened, but I think that may be a record too of appointees that didn't quite make it to the finish line to be judged. So okay. I think it's a little extraordinary in a couple of different ways this time.
But what it does do is take a very large part of what the legislature has been focused on and puts it into the past as they move forward. We know, just to remind people, that the budget has been worked on and pushed from the House over to the Senate Finance, et cetera, to work on. And so that becomes the major focus, the two bodies being able to come to an agreement of what they're going to present to the governor and have that happen. And for those who are wondering, yes, Gavel to Gavel continues to make coverage available. You go there and you can see the list of different committee meetings that are happening, and you can dip in, or if you wish, you can come back at a later time and go to the archives, because it's all there.
8 hours of it.
Yes.
Yeah, KTOO Gavel to Gavel did just an amazing job with that and hanging with that. You know, it's worth saying that not only do legislators put in a full day and their staff that are supporting those positions, but that TV crew really put in a full day too, and then some. So good job. Well done.
Okay. And that pretty much sums up our view at this point about the legislative activity. So let's come back home then. Let's come back home to the borough, where you have just come off of a large number of hours.
Yeah, full day today. And I try to make these every year, Mike. I know I've missed a few, but this one I thought was particularly important because it's a different type of budget than normal. There are different players up there, but they're also faced with a different reality of doing a budget this time.
And what we're talking about are the meetings that the borough holds,
right,
on the budget.
Right. And they were the individual departmental budget presentations. There was John Moosey, the manager, did the introductions at the very beginning. And then there was an explanation on the tax cap, which, as much as people explain it to me, is still confusing. But I think that Director Cheyenne Hindle did a pretty good job trying to explain it to assembly members, because it's certainly going to come up. Planning gave a good presentation. There was one on the port, community development, emergency services, animal care, public works, finance, capital projects, and IT did the cleanup part on it. Started at 9 this morning. I just rolled in here a few minutes ago, Mike. So it was, till about 2 o'clock with about a half hour break in there. And Mr. Beck was running the meeting. The mayor has been out of country. And the assembly members got the budget a few days ago. So they've had the big book, so to speak, of the budget that the managers put together. And these were the individual departments coming to him, do their little horse and pony to let him know what that all those numbers meant in real facts, and what their accomplishments have been, what their challenges have been, what their potential cuts could be, any requests, which were pretty minimal this year. But all in all, I think it went really well. They were given about 10 minutes to do it. Some of them went over, but everybody came in pretty close to the time they were given. Mr. Moosey started out by saying that the budget is not a political statement. It's this one particularly is based on a lot of assumptions, which kind of always makes me chuckle because the school district does that every year. But this is kind of the first year, the really uncomfortable, I think you'd agree, Mike, that the borough is with all of these pending cost shifts that the governor has indicated might happen. And, you know, he's very cognizant of the bond match that may not come through. He's on the chopping block right now for the school bond that voters passed and the 70% match that the the state has promised to and funded in the past, but is always up for legislative appropriation, and that may not come through to them, and that will put them on the hook for about $17 million in debt that they will have to pick up. So it's part of their payment. They have to pick up the state's payment. He's a little worried about losing some port improvement match money that has been formally agreed to, hasn't come up yet, but he's worried, some concern about that. But by and all, you know, he reduced spending, he said, by $11.3 million this time. So he feels like he's made good cuts, strategic cuts, but he is very quick to say that he believes this is their new reality, that he doesn't expect anything to change. So this is what they have to get used to having, doing more with less, as so everybody would say. And we should be reminded the really only tool in the toolbox is property tax for them. I mean, there are some other taxes they could probably levy, but a lot of them have to come from the voters. I think we at some point tried to get a gravel tax a long time ago, and that got voted down. Still has to go to the voter. They could increase cigarette tax. They've been given a list of taxes they could up a little bit, but not enough to fill this hole. So they have a challenge this year, Mike. They really do. So the budgets overall just kind of got rolled out. They did have a presentation by Mr. Harris, their lobbyist, which was probably a good thing for them to hear from. And not, he didn't really tell them anything new, actually, nothing that you and I don't, most of the public doesn't know. All the cities and boroughs are very concerned about this, as they have to take on the state share, and the 25% cut to education is very concerning. There is apt to be a legal battle over that if Governor Dunleavy goes through with that, because it's already been appropriated, and we'll see how that all plays back.
And there was a discussion, interesting discussions, just cycling back briefly to the various committee meetings and so on, around issues associated with the idea that a legislature could forward fund. And just from a legal standpoint, it provides the example of why two lawyers looking at the same thing, one representing the legislative legal staff, the other the governor, could come up with different opinions of saying this is, and until it's settled, although some people have said this has been settled in the past by both the way in which the legislature has done business. And so this is an opportunity when people push some of these issues to bring it to a settlement where the Supreme Court very often is the arbiter and comes in and says, yeah, this is really what you can and can't do given the law.
There was a question to Mr. Harris, who was a Speaker of the House at one point. He was a legislator from Valdez for many years, if he had ever seen this clawback of school bond type money. And he said the only time that he recalls is when Governor Walker did do some cuts. He wasn't in the legislature at that time, but proposed some cuts when he was in trying to get the budget down. He did say that the House budget that has now been sent over to the Senate, who hopes to wrap up their budget and take testimony next week on it, so they're getting very close, thinks it'll be less with some more cuts than the House made, particularly to health and social services. So he expects it to be even less there, which will be interesting to see how they do that. So whether it's less in some areas and more in others, he talked a little bit about the different constitutional amendments that the governor has proposed, and he thinks at some point they'll have legislation that will sort of be the same thing, so that they don't have to really even think about that this year. That would be something for the next.
And of course, there are two recent changes, kind of creative in a way, that emerged as well. One just out with a suggestion from the governor that there would be a change in Medicaid with a process of having subsidized private insurance to move people off of Medicaid and saving money. I think the bare outlines were presented. The pushback from members of the legislature was, this is day whatever. You're not going to be able to vet that here. Yeah. And by the way, what is the cost saving? And the answer was, we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, that seems to be the answer a lot. He did say that he didn't expect and does not hear enough appetite yet for any type of extra revenue, which means no new taxes. It wouldn't happen this session. I find it very hard to believe they'd take that on next session when there's a general election coming up. So to me, if it's not done this year, it's a 3-year process. Could be really kind of a scary outlook for that. But he did answer what they asked. He said that, you know, that it was pretty much known that the cuts that the governor had proposed were unachievable. And so there were definitely going to be some cuts, and they have to see what happens with the veto that it comes up. But he was not encouraging that life would change too much for the borough. He doesn't know what's going to happen with the bond. It sounds like he's almost resigned to the fact there'll be some cut in that. There was some talk later on, Mike, in the presentation, and it really, Assemblymember Sumner really zeroed in on this because he's been supportive at this point of the clawback in the bond and been supportive of the governor clawing that money back, which will be interesting. But there is some leftover money, it turns out, from the 2014 bond, about $9 million. This was from projects that just came underfunded, and they went through a very long process with the state to reappropriate the money to do some deferred maintenance and to do some other projects, which, you know, we don't really have a fund for deferred maintenance, so this is their chance to do that. But there is some talk that they could move that, again, going back through deed and asking for approval towards that $17 million debt.
It's... But again, not doing the deferred maintenance.
Yeah, so it's really just kind of pushing that ball and down. So I would hope the assembly member sitting there would say, can I get a list of the projects we're not paying for? Because if you're a lot of what's been proposed that I see so far is it's someone else's problem. That's certainly what people are surmising from the governor's budget, that we just tighten our belts so much and that somebody else has to pay for it in the next session. So it'll be interesting to say. They did talk about that at the very end with the finance director. She's going to look into it. I don't think it's going to change their payments much on bonds. You can't lower your payments, so to speak, but you can bank that money and you have money to pay that portion, I suppose. And actually, Solomon Summers did ask what the interest rate was on the bonds, and I think he's trying to figure that out. But it is one way they can maybe get around hiring the tax cap a little bit to do this. But it doesn't answer the questions of some of these projects that are these positions. There was a particularly dim outlook for the animal control department. They're losing people who are moving on just because of the economy and security, job security. They're just underwater with animals, as it would be if we've seen. They don't have very many employees. They need at least three more employees to even kind of keep their head above water, and they've not been given any. Ted Leonard did ask for an accounting of how much that would cost, but there's liability issues because you're not getting training. There's all kinds of things that happen when you don't take care of business, so to say, Mike. So it's kind of the theme.
Yeah, and for listeners who were just coming in here, what we're talking about is a situation where the borough has had a series of meetings to have presentations from various departments about what they see in their future. The assembly then, as I understand, is more in a receptive mode, hearing about it, asking questions, et cetera. So how far away are we from that point where they will begin to say, okay, now we've heard this, let's put this all on paper?
Oh, we've got a while. There's all hearings next week, public hearings, to hear from the public. They've heard from the manager, they've heard from the staff. Now they have the opportunity, and they all, most of them did say they had more questions they would, and they were directed to reach out directly to directors about those questions and get those satisfied, so to speak.
So this is going to be a roadshow listening.
Mm-hmm, right.
But the entire assembly is going to these places.
Yep.
Big meetings. Everybody is welcome.
Right.
You don't have to sign up. You just come in and tell people what
you think. And if you go back to what the manager said about priorities, this is the best time and ever to talk about what are your priorities. When you have a department like animal control that is, by industry standards, 50% understaffed, is that your priority, that we have that we're doing education, we're doing spay-neuter clinics at a much reduced rate, or do we want to cut those things? I was really impressed today to hear, I guess, kind of the highlights of how much the borough has saved doing their own work. For instance, Capital Projects now has a full-time surveyor on staff, and they talked about the enormous amount of money that has been saved by doing $90,000 minimal, I think, just by able to do their own surveys on a few things, plus in man hours. And Public Works the same way. They're doing a pretty good job, it seems, looking at what they're contracting out and seeing what they can do in-house with the same amount of people or even with more personnel. But, you know, there's a pushback for that too, Mike, is that people make a lot of money off of government. And if you're not going to do contracting because you're doing it in-house, there's always a pushback about that. But if the bottom line is to save money, then we should be, you know, doing as much as we can in-house. I was really, really impressed with Mr. Barclay from EMS's presentation today, and he talked about the new full-time positions. And already he's been going through the budget night and day, and he had cut over $300,000 from the budget and just overtime and just cleaning up a lot of things. And so they've really, I think they've sharpened their pencils more than I've seen them ever do up to this point. But at the same time, Mike, are we taking care of all our security issues? You know, we're waiting to get a lot of money from FEMA right now because of the earthquake. We don't really know the total results of that. The chances that there'll be another cyber attack are great every single day, no matter how much we try to prepare for it. And while Eric tries to pull us into the next chapter of, you know, updating and being efficient and having things online, he has to worry about, you know, the security of the whole system and the upgrade of the whole system. And when you can't add a lot of money to those things, you're always going to have that chance of peril. So what are our liabilities would be my question with these flat budgets, and what might it be cost us later? I hope assembly members are asking that.
And just for listeners who have enjoyed this summary statement and talk, if you go to the matsugov.us webpage, they have a very nice reference to all of the documents that were associated with what we're talking about. So you can look over what each one of those departments presented, whether it's Public Works, the Port, IT, and so on.
And you can even see a picture of all the people that work in those departments. They're your friends and neighbors.
Right, right. Just to be remindful that, yes, when we say the term government, government is really people. We talk about individuals because they're prominent. They're sitting up at the assembly table or the mayor, or people that head up departments, whether it's Mr. Barclay or others. But there are other people that actually do the work that make all of this happen.
Yeah.
And I say this because, as I understand, there were not too many people in the audience watching this.
Yeah, a matter of timing, I'm sure. 9 o'clock is not easy for people to be there and be involved. But I think, in a way, if they aren't driven to the numbers and they don't hear the people from the departments answering the questions that the assembly gives them, there's a lot of misinformation when people do get to testify because it's not fact-based and they don't have the information ahead of time. So I'm not sure when is the best time to do this. I think it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, Mike. Every time I hear about a public hearing, it's never at the right time for somebody. But I think they did a nice job putting it online. I think I can say that this is, for a long time anyway, first budget hearing I've been to, that the department documents not only were there at the back of the room on every single thing they talked about, but also online.
Sure.
That you could follow. So I think that's quite a step in the right direction. I would say kudos to Assemblymember Jim Sykes, who has really pushed for transparency. He's still wanting that checkbook online. That was sort of his goal. And they were very close before they had this terrible cyber attack that took out a lot of their capabilities. But they're getting closer to that. They hope to achieve that, certainly, in their to-do list this year. But, you know, even Ted Leonard, who is probably the most knowledgeable budget person sitting up there right now, said that when he was a CFO, he was afraid to do a CAFRA, or the annual budget that we get awards for, that our department gets awards for putting that assessment. So those tools are online. He even said that the budget, the ones for past years, are online for people to look at. This proposed one will be online if you want to look at hundreds of pages, and few people do, but.
Right. And you go to matsugov, that's all one word, .us, and there it is.
There it is.
Well, we have a short time left. So any last comments? You've covered
well,
a lot.
I would just encourage people to get on the website, look those things over, and find out. There will be one in Wasilla of these presentations next week. There'll be one in Palmer. There'll be one all the way up in Willow, which is actually very well attended most of the time. And I encourage people to get out. I mean, I think people are paying attention to the budget, but also to pay attention to the fact that this is a different year, and that the way that the state government is now operating, it's not a matter of wants anymore for the borough. Those cost shifts are going to have some real impacts into everyday services and lives of people that already sometimes think they're underserved. And I think, you know, it's going to be a very interesting year ahead, no matter how this comes out, Mike.
Well, thank you, Terry Snyder, for taking the time to both go to these meetings and come in and share. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.